me, Anthony Wooten, and best-selling author of The Greatest American Football Story That Has Never Been Told, Transatlantic Sports Podcast. I was on his show just a few days ago. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And you can get him on X at AR Wooten, two T's. Don't make two O's, two T's. Don't make that mistake. And Anthony, look, here's the beautiful thing. You're in the UK. Are you in London? Are you in London right now? Or
I'm just outside London in a place called Henley-on-Thames. We're actually on the River Thames. We're about 35 miles away.
There you go. So you're in the UK. I'm in the US. Go, let's rewind our ancestors 250 years earlier. Could they have imagined this weekend, Philadelphia, the city of independence in 1776, New York, British controlled. Here they are playing an American game developed during the Civil War on UK soil. And here we are trying to bring this great sport to the people of Europe, specifically the UK. So it's funny how what has changed in 250 years, not that long, I guess, in the scheme of time. But welcome to the program, Anthony. Thanks for reciprocating. Had a great time on your show the other day. And you were out at the ballpark, London Stadium, and the atmosphere. So give us a little feel. How was it this week? And Mets, Phillies split the series. A lot of fun, it seemed like, watching back home here in New York.
Well, I'll tell you what, a few weeks ago, almost 2 calendar months ago in early April, I was at that London Stadium and it was West Ham United. They were hosting their London rivals. It was a London derby over here. Tottenham Hotspur were at that stadium. It was a 1-1 draw. The atmosphere this weekend for the NL East rivalry between the New York Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies was more electric inside that stadium than it was for West Ham against Spurs.
And you're not just telling me that to butter me up here. You really mean
absolutely
that?
Absolutely not.
That West Ham, so for those who are not, you know, those who are the amateurs in the audience that just watch Ted Lasso and know from a production standpoint, the passion of football, European football. And I talked to you about it. I have some roots. My family growing up in Portugal has some roots watching football over there. You really mean that the atmosphere, the 55,000 or so that watched the Mets and Phillies, majority Phillies fans, it seemed like, had the same spirit and passion that you saw for West Ham, which is no joke, right? This is not a joke.
I kid you not. You know, you watch Ted Lasso, West Ham are involved in Ted Lasso quite prominently. So you see that stadium. But honestly, I mean, the rivalry between West Ham and Tottenham Hotspur cuts deep. You know, there's not many miles separating those two teams.
Right.
But being at that game a couple of months ago, I think it was the 2nd of April, so it was just after Easter. It was a 1-1 draw. After about 20 minutes, it was a great 20 minutes of that game. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to go in depth about that. But after 20 minutes of that game, it was an intense first 20 minutes. Then it was 1-1, and then it petered out. And the atmosphere felt flat. But the atmosphere this weekend for the baseball was electric. And it was electric from start to finish. I would say the only time when it fell a bit flat was on Saturday when it was 7-2 and the Mets were obviously fighting for it, but they just couldn't get over the hump, and you know, it was done and dusted by that point. That was the flattest that it had been. But honestly, Major League Baseball and those two teams, they brought it. I think we were treated to a fantastic series, and people absolutely lapped it up. They loved it.
Anthony, they've been, you know, the baseball's been to London before, Yankees, Red Sox before the pandemic. I think it was Cardinals, Cubs last year. Have you been to some of those other events? And has this, I mean, forget about the teams. Obviously, every team has their own culture, their own following. Was this, because now we're on the third rung of this, was this better than that? Has it become more of an event? Like, could you have any point of comparison, even if you weren't at the ballpark, but just living over there and experiencing it?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be at the very first London Series game between the Red Sox and the Yankees. The first innings of that, we talked about it the other day. Yep. It was 6-6. You know, it went on for over an hour.
They made some changes to the outfield, they said, where they brought the alleys a little bit, you know, bigger and things like that, you know?
That's right. And, you know, that game went on for, I think, 5.5 hours, whereas these games this weekend had been probably touching about 3 hours from start to finish. But I tweeted out on Sunday that, and I applauded MLB Europe for putting on the games. And the whole showcase from the two games that were at the London Stadium. And also, there was a Trafalgar Square takeover. So I'm sure all of you guys watching this podcast who watched the games will have seen the cutaways to Trafalgar Square, which is an iconic London venue where people go. If you come to London, you're going to want to go to Trafalgar Square, and you can look down, you can see Big Ben, and Pall Mall's just down the around the corner where you've got King Charles and Buckingham Palace, etc. They'd taken over. MLB had taken over Trafalgar Square. I attended that last year when it was the Cubs and the Cardinals. And again, the setup there is fantastic. So if people can't go to the games for whatever reason, they still get to soak up baseball and get a sense of baseball. They screen the baseball there. They've got Home Run Derby X going on there as well. So, you know, the likes of Chase Utley were having a competition there on Friday evening. Going back to that first game in 2019 between the Red Sox and the Yankees, it felt like it was something new, and the audience was quite raw. Of course, there are long-standing baseball fans over here in Great Britain, and that's also part of the reason why MLB targeted London, because there's a market for it. But the atmosphere was maybe a little flatter, just because there was more like, okay, well, what's going on here? Whereas this weekend, I sincerely believe that it was a turning point for MLB and this London market, just like we've had a turning point for the NFL over here in London. That turning point from when the NFL went from one game a season at Wembley Stadium to two games to suddenly three, right. And then we had four, and we've had multiple venues, and now we have a specifically designed stadium for NFL games, which is at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and then the Jags have their own thing with Wembley Stadium. This weekend really did feel like it's a pivotal moment, and it could be for the better for MLB from a marketing perspective out here in London, because the atmosphere, there was an appetite for it. And that finish, you guys, you met, yep. You know, that
yeah.
finish on Sunday, certainly, I think that was the icing on the cake.
You got a good feel about all the little nuance of the game, you know, big plays. I mean, that was a very rare play. I mean, for those who just started watching the game, you don't get 2-3 double plays like that. And Torrens, who just was picked up a week ago, has shown a lot with his glove and even with his bat. So he's actually been impressive. You brought up the Jaguars. The Jaguars have become like a de facto, I guess,
right.
a London team. Is that correct? And I noticed that the Phillies had a big contingent there. Of course, they're having a great start to the season. I think I saw some video of a Phillies bar. We here at the Talking Mets podcast have tons of UK Mets fans. I had no idea, like I told you on Transatlantic Sports Show, I had no idea there's all these fans in London, or the UK, I should say London. And then they start emailing me, and I'm like, really? There's all these people that listen to me over there? I'm like, why? You guys like baseball? Like, no, we like baseball. So are you seeing anything where the Mets or the Phillies could become somewhat like what the Jaguars are? I know that the obvious answer would be, well, it's the Yankees because of the iconic nature of, you know, I think somebody, I was recently, at an event, and the Bishop said the Yankees are like the Vatican. I'm like, oh, geez, as a Mets fan, I'm like, oh, come on.
Come on, dude.
I was at church and the Bishop's like, you know, so I'm like, ah, oh, come on. But what do you feel about these two teams? Have they, at some point, because there's going to be, just like in the U.S., that has bars for Chelsea and certain football clubs, you wonder if that could start to pop up in London and maybe other parts of Europe.
Yeah, you know what? I can't remember who it was. There was a player, it was a Phillies player, and on the big screen, there was, you know, these VT, so these pre-recorded video bits that take place in between plays, and he was asked who his favorite Premier League team was, and he said he didn't really have a favorite Premier League team, but his brother was a Manchester City fan. So because he's a Manchester City fan, he's going to say Manchester City. He got booed. The whole stadium booed it. And I think, you know, because everybody's fed up of Manchester City over here.
Sure.
They won four Premier League titles in a row.
Sure.
It's like everybody was fed up of Manchester United back in the day when they won all their Premier League titles. I think there's a similar mindset towards the Yankees. Everybody's like, yeah, the Yankees, they're a big franchise. Of course, they're going to appeal to people. But I think your hardcore and also your potential next generation of baseball fans,
right.
It's going to be cooler not to be the Yankees. So there really is that opportunity there. Whether it is the blue-collar city of Philadelphia or whether it is the Mets, you know, like I think that That final play from the Mets, my boys, right? So they didn't go to the games, but I took them to Trafalgar Square yesterday, on Saturday. And we went down and they had a go at T-ball. They were given a baseball. You know what happened? I left them with my wife. They came home. I went off to the game. My wife sending me videos of the boys in our backyard playing baseball.
Look at that.
You know,
That's
it
Rob Manfred.
inspired me.
That's what they want. That's what the league
Yes.
wants at that point. What's interesting is because I look, and I've said this on your show, my nephew's at that early teenage years and big basketball fan. And I talked to him recently, and I think I told you this story. His friends are not that much into baseball, which made me sad. Doesn't surprise me 100%. They're into basketball. And look, the NBA, when David Stearns was the commissioner, and they started doing games in London back in the early 90s at that point. I think it was Shaq and the Magic or something like that, would send tapes back in the VHS days of Jordan. And that's how he grew the game pre-internet, pre-YouTube. And I'm not sure baseball could really market a player like Mike Trout or Ohtani. I keep hearing, well, the league doesn't do enough to market players. Baseball's a different sport. It's hard. No one player dominates the ball except the pitcher. And that's once every 5 days. I think it has to be a situation where you start to fall for teams. We have to accept that it's a regional sport, and you have to fall in love with the laundry and the history and what the laundry means, whether it be the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Phillies, the Cubs, the Cardinals, all these, what I would say are the core iconic cities and teams the sport has to offer. You having young kids, you seeing and talking about what just happened. Am I on point with that, or is it, or am I missing the boat? Because I just don't think you can market a player because of the nature of what the sport is. It's so much different even than football, where a player could dominate the game as well in that sport as well.
You know what? Interesting you should bring that up because I was sat, obviously I sit with the journalists at the games, and I was interviewing. I pulled my mic up alongside one of the reporters that I get on with. I see him at the NFL games over here in London. And I mentioned Bryce Harper because Bryce Harper, from a marketing standpoint, let's take our Mets hats off
Sure,
at the moment,
sure.
but I think Francisco Lindor as well. He captured the crowd, they captured the
Right.
imagination of the crowd with when he took the field. But Bryce Harper, that slide, that soccer player slide that
You
he
guys
did
like that,
when.
huh?
That's an iconic moment, and that's going to live long in the memory. Just like that play that iced the game for the Mets is also going to be one of those iconic moments. My boys sat down with me at the end. Well, they watched the game on Sunday, and I stayed at home and watched it on the television with them. They were captivated by it, and then that play at the end, they went straight out into the back garden. They were playing baseball. They asked me to come out, and of course, I'm
Right.
going to say yes, and I played
Sure,
baseball with
yeah.
them. Taking them to bed this evening, they asked me, "Where do you watch baseball?" I was like, "Well, at the state." No, where do you watch it when it's on the TV? What channel is it on?" And I pointed them in the direction of where I get it. I have MLB Game Pass. And I said,
Sure.
"Well, if you load up the Xbox, you will find the app there and you'll find it." I
Right.
said, "You don't have to watch the whole games. You can select the highlights. So if you wake up in the morning and you want
Right.
to see how the Mets have done, because,
Sure.
hey guys, you know what?
Yeah.
They like the Mets, and
Look at
they're going to
that.
see the Mets. They're coming to New
Look at
York
that.
in
We
August.
converted them.
They
Anthony
like the
Wooten
Mets.
invites me on the Transatlantic Sports Show. Now he's on the Talking Mets podcast. It's like the Pied Piper of Mets baseball. I've indoctrinated every my evil diabolical plan is working of indoctrination, man. It works. Trust me on
It's
that.
work,
But
man. You know what? And they'd ask, and I've said, well, if you load up the you switch on the Xbox, and on the home screen you'll see the MLB logo. That is the Game Pass, and you can go. You select the Mets, and you can watch the highlights. You don't even have to see the
right.
score, and you can watch the game in 2 to 5 minutes. And you
Right.
can get to know the players. So when we go in August to see the Mets against the A's, they're gonna know, and they're gonna be up for it. And my eldest has said, yeah, I'm going to save up my money so I get some merch.
There you
So
go.
there you
Again,
go.
Rob Manfred, listen to that. It's smiles from ear to ear. Anthony Wooten, you guys can check him out on X at AR Wooten, best-selling author, Transatlantic Sports Show. Was there, I'm listening to Chase Utley during the ESPN broadcast, and he's talking about the progress they've made with the sport. I've had Mike Piazza on the show. I know he's trying to do that in Italy, and there's been for years, 20 years, I know someone who's been trying to do it in Ireland and Irish baseball. And where is it at this point? We Here in the United States, you know, soccer, we call it, has always been popular, but it's growing amongst the non-first generation immigrant demographic. I grew up in a neighborhood, a lot of first generation Italians. They would come here with the basis of what soccer was all about. Believe it or not, a lot of them were attracted to the NHL. In my opinion, I felt the NHL resembled most close to what they had in Italy with soccer. Now here, you know, is baseball growing because there's components, not that there's components of football, European football, but I guess there could be some of that strategy and that thought. Because look, people watch a 1-0 soccer slash football game, and I've watched World Cup games. I still remember the 1994 World Cup finals, Italy and Brazil. I was rooting for Brazil just because I didn't want them to close. My neighborhood would close down. The Italians would close it down to celebrate. I just wanted to see them not close my neighborhood down. And that was like an overtime, you know, a penalty kick game.
Penalty,
So
yeah, but
there's a lot of nuance to the sport. I'm wondering if that translates. That's why there's maybe some ability for baseball to be successful, at least in the UK. Let's talk about that specifically.
yeah, the fastest growing sport outside of soccer, football over here is basketball. So but the NBA doesn't come to London. It did come to London. It now goes to Paris because basketball is absolutely huge in France. So, the NFL is very committed to flag football, and I think we're going to see a massive spike in take up in that in 2028 when the Olympics in LA has flag football as a part of that. But no, I do believe that there is an uptick and that there could be an increase in participation in baseball. Softball is big over here. My wife, she has friends who compete in softball leagues in different parts of the country. My eldest son, who he was fortunate to come to the first MLB London Series games, that Red Sox and Yankees game, and he loved it. He's not a big soccer football fan, but he enjoys baseball, and he's competed and played softball locally, probably about 8 miles away from where we live in this corner of Oxfordshire, for a softball team. And that's not the biggest softball team in this area. There are other softball teams in a couple of other towns within the vicinity. So within probably a 15-mile radius, there's a couple of more softball setups that are very, very popular, and they actually have softball teams for different age groups. And like I said at the start of the show, I firmly believe, because this game as well was free to air on the BBC.
I
So
got you. Okay.
the BBC is, it's the British Broadcasting
Sure.
Corporation. So
Sure.
that is national television. Okay, it was on their streaming service, which is called the iPlayer, but everybody's streaming now these days anyway.
Yeah.
So I selected it on my TV. It was as good as turning on BBC One or
Yeah.
BBC Two. It was there, it's available. That's what I sat down to watch it on today with the coverage. There's also a pay-per-view. Well, it's a cable TV or satellite TV station over here. TNT. Well, you guys have TNT, but we have the British version of TNT Sports. They have their own British commentary on that as well. And the
I thought the
play at the end
broadcast
has
was
gone
great.
viral.
Your
Yeah.
play-by-play guy is getting a lot of viral love on X because of his call on
Yes.
that final
Yeah.
play. Now, some of that's anti-Yankees feeling because of Michael Kay, which I don't know. I wonder if they were actually there, ESPN, or they were doing that from a studio. I'm curious because Kay does the Yankees. But, you know, our friend Anthony Wooten actually was able to talk to Mets manager Carlos Mendoza. And actually, you know, the whole thing about baseball these days is market inefficiencies. How can you find the next thing? And our friend Anthony here might have been able to percolate. Maybe David Stearns was listening, saying, "Hey, why don't you start looking to the cricket leagues?"
That's right.
Cricket leagues. I'm talking too fast here. And that's funny because just not too far from me right now is the Cricket World Series. I'm out on Long Island. They're playing the Cricket World Series in Nassau County and what have you. So you were able to actually ask Carlos Mendoza about that. And that is something interesting because even Tom Verducci on the ESPN broadcast talked about how the one time he heard his father get passionate at the dinner table as a kid in the 60s is when they're watching the 68 World Series. And his mom said, you know, can a cricket player throw harder than a baseball pitcher? And he went crazy on it. So it's interesting. There is some, and I remember growing up and some of the individuals I went to school with that were, again, first generation immigrants talked about cricket in a way that, yes, there is some similarities at that point.
Yeah, absolutely, there are. And you know what? That question was inspired by you, Mike, from our conversation.
You told me about influencing the press box. That's amazing. Look at that. Look up. It's working. My diabolical plan is working at that point.
Because, you know, you told me about seeing the signs for the Cricket World Cup, and that just triggered a light bulb moment. So I was sat there in the press conference on Friday, so we went to the workout day, got great field access, and I thought this is a great opportunity to ask the question because, you know, with the NFL, we've seen the NFL International Player Pathway Program, and, you know, there's a player who is selected by the Bills in the draft, a guy called Travis Clayton. He's actually not far from where I live, and he's been drafted. We've seen F.A. Obada with the Commanders. He played with the Bills and a couple of other teams as well. So thanks to the success of the International Player Pathway Program, NFL teams are now bringing in talent, rugby players, or kickers from the soccer world. So I thought, well, I'll ask the question because you've got cricket over there in the States, and just the previous day, the USA had a historic win against Pakistan of all teams, at the Cricket World Cup. So you're talking about inspiring future fans and the next generation of fans in your country there. Yep. That's going to do that. So that's the reason why I asked the question. And he admitted that he hasn't really paid much attention to cricket, but he said, it's a great question. And hopefully it triggers something in the mindset there within the franchise and think, okay, well, actually we can look towards cricket if we can. I asked Pete Alonso as well about how they could – well, it was more of a cheeky question saying, like, look, you guys, your game starts at around the same time as England-Australia in the Cricket World Cup. So England-Australia started 20 minutes before the start of the Saturday game between, between the Mets and the Phillies. So with that in mind, and we all know how intense that rivalry, worlds apart.
Sure.
England and Australia.
Sure.
But
sure.
This is
big rivalry.
This is next week. This is like Yankee
That's
Red
big
Sox.
Brother, little brother, right?
It's huge, man. It is absolutely huge.
Anyone who knows history understands that, right?
It's like Pete Alonso, look, you guys are coming up neck and neck, head to head with England and Australia. Mm-hmm. And I asked him how he would pitch it to this English audience, to tune into the baseball instead of the cricket. He said it was a good answer. He said, well, you could record the cricket and watch the baseball, which is fine. But I think, it's one of those, you just put him on the spot. But he was really good. He was really impressive because he was asked questions about some of the other English sports and he talked about soccer, football. But his knowledge of rugby was really impressive. Right. He's watched rugby documentaries. So he blew away the press crowd on Friday. But going back to Mendoza and that question, I do believe that we've got this opportunity, or MLB has got this opportunity to, take the next step from a baseball perspective over here on these shores. Cricket's got that over and over, especially if USA continue to have impressive results, they've had two wins. They beat Canada and then Pakistan.
Sports has a way of allowing us to put a lot of the nonsense and the garbage that really makes us different and agitates us, put it aside, because at the end, it's about teamwork. It's about something bigger than yourself. I know that all sounds cliche, but it's true. Now, if you follow Anthony on X, you want to get hungry. All I kept hearing from the players and people there is how great the food is, and it's better than New York. And that's a high bar because – no offense, Philly has cheese steaks, but New York has some of the best culinary in the world. You follow Anthony, you get to see, it looks like it's cheese and meat or sausage. I'm getting hungry just looking at that sandwich. Yeah. Is that a cheese steak or a Britain cheese steak or a UK cheese steak? What do you got? What's the food like? Because you made me really hungry following you there on
Well, you know what? They treated us MLB. They brought delicacies from both Philadelphia and New York. So there was a pastrami sandwich involved as well. But there was one photo that I shared, which was a cheese steak. But we had this thing called the boom stick, and it's a 2 foot long hot dog. But on that as well is chili and nachos and sour cream. So, it's almost chili con carne. Well, it is chili con carne on top of a hot dog inside a bun with
one of my favorites, as long as it's not spicy. As long as it's not too spicy, I love chili. I love chicken and rice. I love cheese and meat. all these things that make the belly pop out. And then I look at myself and I'm like, oh God, I don't like the way I look in a mirror, but that's another story on that. Couple of things before we wrap up. So how can this be better? So, you know, I think baseball, listening to you, listening to Utley, having skin in the game this year, you know, as someone who covers the Mets and follows the Mets, you know, COVID kind of took away some of the momentum from the Yankees, Red Sox and what have you. And I thought about this, and I'll tell you some of my thoughts. I'm curious your thoughts. So, you know, do you do what the NFL does, and maybe, and this, these games count, so you have to be careful about when you do them. You know, as you get later in the year, it gets more complicated. There are ramifications, you know, they get an extra player. There's travel ramifications. It's not, you know, around the corner. But maybe they make a week out of it. Do they make it a week with four games, two and two, and then make it a week celebration? You know, is it multiple points in the season where they figure out how to have multiple series? Do you have teams come back more frequently to build that regional affiliation? Or is it better to see a smorgasbord of organizations? How do you, because you're there, you understand what needs to be done. Here in the States, New York has their Mets base and will hopefully grow from that. But for the sport to grow, I really think they need to pull in that fan that's not in the New York area that connects to the organization. And I think the way that fans here root for football teams there and have their bar, I said this earlier, and their affiliation, maybe that's a template. Do you, how do you make that happen? Or is it that, is that necessary for that to happen?
Well, going back to, you know, I've been covering the NFL over here for over a decade. So I've gone to every NFL London game. I've done the NFL Germany games. And, you know, I speak to fans every time. And every time I always ask, especially in London, whether they would support a London franchise. And I think the NFL is so long established here that fans wouldn't. They go to the games, but they've got their affiliation with their teams. What they prefer, I think the NFL have kind of settled on this now, is a festival of football. Just give us teams, give us good matchups. But, you know, we would celebrate that festival of football. You know, I know there'll be some Mets fans listening to your podcast and, you know, may not agree with me, but Munich has got the Giants and the Panthers this year. You know, that's it's not going to captivate that audience. But there is a real hunger and appetite. The German fan base in the market for NFL is bigger than it is here in the UK. So they're going to eat that up. They're going to buy the tickets. It's not Brady who was over there for the first game in 2022. It's not the Chiefs and Dolphins that Frankfurt had last year. But there's going to be an appetite for it. We've got our three games, the two at Tottenham Stadium and then the Jags at Wembley this year. Tickets are sort of selling out. You know, for those, they go on general sale for the two games at Tottenham Stadium very soon. But Wembley's sold out. 85,000 fans, they're going to be there. So going back to your question about MLB, I think a four-game series across a week is a very good idea, especially if we're going to get those West Coast teams. Like, let's say we're going to get Giants Dodgers over here or any of those teams that are on the West Coast. Because the time difference, because, you know, your Mets have played this weekend. And then they're playing again on Tuesday. Yep. You know, there's hardly any rest time there.
I did like 10 o'clock in the morning. The game's over by like 1:30. You got the whole day ahead of you. And for, you know, thankfully for you, it's 5 hours ahead. It's bedtime for you guys over there. But that's interesting, you know, kind of do that. And I think another thing I thought about was maybe like, you know, when the sport is here, they had like hockey night in Canada, you know, a baseball night for you guys. You know, how does the time work? You know, 1 o'clock or 1:40. You know, now they start 1:40 here, the games on Sunday. That's about 6:40, 7 o'clock your time. Maybe they could align some games the time here and have it like an event. You know, maybe have Giants Dodgers and then the, you know, it's wrap around with Mets and somebody else or Yankees and somebody else. Or is it a week where the two teams play a four game series, two at home, proverbially home, two on the road, maybe spread it out? I mean, Ken, would that help having this from Monday to Sunday, or is it because of the work week and obviously weather plays into it? I think the weather cooperated. No rain. I don't know what the weather's like usually in June. You know, there's other considerations there. So are those kind of ideas that work, or, you know, let's keep it the way it is and continue in between?
There's always going to be the risk. Yeah, I think for games over here, you're probably going to have to look. Let's say they did multiple games or multiple series over here. So whether it's a two-game series or four-game series, if you're going to spread it out, you're probably going to want to look at those June, July, August months. But like August, you're pushing towards, chasing for wild cards. So teams may be a little bit more reluctant at that stage of the season. July is a very good month weather-wise over here. It can be a little bit inconsistent with rain. May is normally, we've just had the driest May and the warmest May on record, though people over here would argue with that because we did have to have the heating on because it was so cold. But I'd say, yeah, they could target the May, June, July months for that.
Sure.
I don't think, I think they would struggle to sell 55,000 tickets for games during the week. If they were to do it, it would be they could. If they, let's say they target May. We have what you call bank holiday, public holidays over here, twice in May, two May bank holidays, one at the start and one at the end of May. They could look at that, and you could have the four game series. You get Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then
Sure.
the bank holiday Monday. That could work. Alternatively, you could bring over a three game series, but I just think unless it's during the summer months where you have school
Yeah.
holidays, like you guys, the
It'd
summer
be
vacations.
tough. It'd be
Yeah, I
tough
think
with
it would be
people at
tough
work.
to
Yeah.
for people to make it to those games during a working week. But then, in the evenings it could work. But I
Right.
think the MLB would find that to be a challenge. Whereas obviously at a weekend like we've just experienced this weekend, you've got Saturday, Sunday, and people are
Sure.
fully engaged in that because they've got that time off. So yeah, to go back, if it's four games, I think you bang on. There's a bank holiday at the end of August, but again, you're pushing towards the
The end of
wild
the,
card race, so
yeah.
it's going to be a bit tricky. Or a couple of those weekends in May where you could tie it in quite nice, and you could squeeze in four games. But yeah, I think you could perhaps expand it to three games, and you would
Yeah.
still look at
And
selling
still
out
be able to
those.
sell out the games
Yeah,
and it's
and
amazing how they build that stadium. I didn't realize it's a stadium in a box. They take these 1 ton bags, they bring the sod over, and it's pretty interesting. So I learned a lot over the last couple of days, learned a lot talking to you. Obviously, you have your show and you're not just a baseball show, the Transatlantic Sports Podcast. You could let the listeners know about that. But on the way out here, if before you talk about what you do and those who want to continue following you now that this series is over, did you learn anything new the last couple of days? What was your biggest learning, if anything, about the sport, or it could be about the teams, or is there something that, maybe going into this was a little bit different, or good, bad, or indifferent? I'm curious what your biggest learning, if there is any, that you took away.
Yeah, my biggest learning is it's about the pitcher, isn't it? I think that's the biggest. I've been to baseball games in the past. I've been to baseball games in the States, and I've gone expecting home runs. I want runs, but then with the knowledge of fielding, defense, and the pitcher, and just watching the pitcher and admiring the work that the pitcher does. I think it gave a better appreciation for the sport. Of course, I love the hits. I enjoyed some of the stars that were on show. So Francisco Lindor, having spoken to Pete Alonso, and he's so eloquent when he speaks. He's brought a different perspective to the game for me, just because of what a gentleman he is. And then Bryce Harper. I'm sorry to say Mets fans, but
Oh.
he was a superstar, and he's like the David Beckham of the day, I guess, for baseball fans over here in the UK. But yeah, I think pitching and focusing and really appreciating the pitcher and how important those pitchers are, and especially on Saturday when I was there, and you're seeing the struggles at times of the pitchers, and you're bringing the
Yeah.
guys out of the bullpen,
Right.
that was a real learning curve.
Yep,
Absolutely.
and they throw us. So if those who want to follow you, talk a little bit about here what you do on your show. You wrote a book about American football. You cover sports over there. Obviously, the NFL's big. I'm sure most, if not all, the people listening are football fans. So talk a little bit about what is up next for you now that this series is over.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah, so I'm a sports journalist over here. I've covered the past two Super Bowls, so I've been out there in Vegas and in Phoenix. And as I said, I cover all of the NFL London games and the NFL Germany games. Don't know if I'll be in Brazil. We'll just have to wait and see if I get the call for that, if I'm
Right.
fortunate for that one in week one.
Right.
But yes, having covered in depth the NFL London games, I have a strong connection and affiliation to the sport. I grew up in Winnipeg as a child in Canada, so I played Pop Warner football, so I brought a
Wow.
love for American football over to the UK, and I've always been a big fan of the sport. And it's through covering the NFL London games that I discovered this story of American football, which was about two games that were played 80 years ago. I know we just commemorated the war heroes of the Second World War, the 80th anniversary of
Right.
D-Day. And a couple of players who featured in my book were actually part of those initial Normandy invasions in D-Day. And it was whilst just researching some historical NFL games and American football games in the UK that I stumbled across this story of these two games that were played between Canadian and American troops at a stadium, White City Stadium in London, in front of 50,000 fans, during the Second World War, just weeks before D-Day
Wow.
in early,
Wow.
well, late winter, early spring in 1944. They were called the T-ball and the coffee ball. There's one half played in Canadian football rules, the other half in American football rules. And because you Americans don't like to lose, and you lost the first game to the Canucks, there was a
Yeah,
rematch.
there was
And
a
you guys
rematch.
drafted in ringers, and there was a
There you
Philadelphia
go. There you
Eagles
go. You
quarterback
got
involved, and you guys
her.
absolutely annihilated the Canucks
There you
in the
go.
second game. That's what the story's about. And then I expand it to look at, there's a chapter on Pat Tillman. I spoke to Dave McGinnis, who was his head coach at the Arizona Cardinals. When Pat
Yep.
waived his multi-million dollar contract to go and serve his country,
Right.
and obviously we know the tragic story involved
Sure.
there. But
Sure.
then also I expanded to the growth of NFL International. And when I was in Frankfurt last year, I sat down with Oliver Luck, the former Houston Oilers quarterback, who was also the former president of NFL Europe, and is the father of Andrew Luck. And Peter King, he's contributes to the book as well. So it
Oh,
explores
Peter
the
King. Yeah, I haven't heard
yeah
that
that's
name in a
right
while. Peter King.
yeah
He
he
was the insider before insiders when it came to
That's
NFL.
right. Yeah. So, he
Yeah.
contributed to the book because he's been a real advocate for NFL International. And it's a celebration of
Yep.
NFL International, both historically and then, also what it's becoming. So, yeah, my Transatlantic Sports Show features some great guests. I'm very fortunate to be connected to NFL players. So, now that the NFL teams have shut down post mini camps, obviously, we can't do anything until training camp. So we'll get a few of the players connected to the Vikings and the Jets and, the teams that are coming out here in October this year. So I'll get some interviews with those, and they'll feature on the Transatlantic Sports Show podcast, available through your favorite podcast provider, also on YouTube as well. And of course, it's not just about football, though predominantly it is about football, American football, that is. I do a lot to promote and cover MLB and baseball. So there will be moving on from this. There's going to be a nice reflective piece. We're going to look back and celebrate this wonderful weekend of MLB action in London. That's what the next show is going to be. And then we'll start looking ahead to the NFL season. But you know what? There is an audience there for baseball, and I'll keep that appetite fueled for baseball
You'll
fans. And
get
when
it
I come over
going.
in
Yep.
August,
And I
can you
love to see
feel
you. So the plan is I'm going to try to make it out to Citi Field in August when Oakland's there and say hello to you and your lovely family. I'm going to indoctrinate your kids to become Knicks fans. That's my next goal. Since the NBA is there, we're going to nail down the indoctrination of them being a Mets fan. Talk to me in 5 years when all the garbage and disappointment that sports, and especially a sport with a high probabilistic outcome of failure, and then they say, Dad, why did you introduce me to that guy? He just ruined my life. He made things so much harder. And you know what? It's the baton that I have to pass down. And I'll give him the Knicks. And maybe all of a sudden it'll be the golden era with Steve Cohen as the owner and the Knicks with Jalen Brunson. And then they could become a better version of what I've had to go through the last 40 years. And they could have the blessed times without the pain and suffering that comes with being a sports fan sometimes. But Anthony, I'm looking forward to potentially seeing you when you come to the States. You've been great. Your show was great. I'm glad I had a chance to come on it. Go get some sleep, recoup, recover. And thanks for educating the Mets fan base about this great weekend, Mets Phillies, and Mets escape with a win, and we'll see where it takes them.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Mike. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for coming to my program as well last week. And yeah, you know what? Sport, it's a beautiful thing. It's also a very frustrating thing. But yeah, thanks to you. And yeah, go Mets.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll be there in a few weeks.
Anthony's going to open up a pub in the UK for just Mets fans. And he's just going to give me 10% of the profits. That's because I'm going to be the great. All of a sudden, they're going to build a statue of me next to whatever great king was in there. He was the guy. Put a statue of King George, myself, and Ducky next. Nicely. I don't know who would get more eggs thrown at them. It's debatable at this point. So
that's like King Ralph, the great film. There you go.
All right, Anthony, go get some rest. Thanks so much, man. We'll talk again. Be well. That's Anthony Wooten, the Transatlantic Sports Podcast at A.R. Wooten, 2 O's, 2 T's on X. All right, let's take a quick break, wrap up. I have some comments on the way out. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. I want to thank Anthony Wooten for joining me and giving his perspective about the Mets and Phillies in the London series, and so many exciting things came out of that. And I'll tell you, as I was in the break earlier in the show, had gotten emails from some of our loyal listeners that Liam, who lives over there in the UK, sent me some great photos. I believe it was Drew Smith. He took a photo out, had some great seats, enjoyed watching the Mets, something that, you know, he, as someone who lives across the pond, can't do in real time like you and I do. Sean, who sent me a great note. He traveled from the United States out to the UK and talked about how great it was and how this might be the best one yet. I think Sean lives over there. Sean, if you live over there, I don't know if you're traveling back to the US or you live out there, but you know, good for you. I hope you enjoyed the events. You gave some great insight how good the London series. It sounds like you've been to a few of these. So whether you live there or you travel there and go back and forth, you know, good to hear from you. And you heard from Anthony, and I think I want to reiterate that. I think the importance of the growth of the game, and I've changed my tune on this because, you know, I'm one of those guys over the years that has said, look, you know, baseball is a regional sport. It's about the tradition. It's about how it's been for 100 years. You have your New York market, you have your Philly market, you have your West Coast teams, and you have a whole bunch in the middle there, you know, that, you know, have some passionate, solid fan bases like the Cubs or the Cardinals, and maybe, you know, not so good fan bases or newer fan bases, the Arizonas and the Colorados and things like that, where, you know, sometimes you think, you know, in some of these markets, it's something to get you between football and football, depending on where you are in the country, right? And, you know, that's not the right way to look at it. And I also think baseball, I don't know, and I've said this, you know, I don't know if you can grow it in this country in the kind of way that grabbing an international audience can. I'm not saying you punt on the country. You can't do that. You know, the Mets have a responsibility to get the next generation of Mets fans. Because don't assume because somebody who's a father listening to the Talking Mets podcast, who's been rooting and watching the Mets maybe since the 60s or 70s or whatever, their son or their daughter is just necessarily going to jump on board and be a Mets fan. It usually works like that, and you hope it works like that, but sometimes kids don't want to be like their parents. And sometimes if you grew up, and there are plenty of stories of kids that grew up impressionable in the mid to late 90s, their fathers were longtime Mets fans or their mothers were longtime Mets fans, and they became Yankees fans because guess what? A lot of the kids in their class, in their school, were loving David Cone and Daryl Strawberry as a Yankee and Andy Pettit and Derek Jeter, and the 96 Yankees captivated the city and they captivated the hearts and minds of a lot of young people. And who knows, the Yankees are on that kind of run this year with Soto. We'll see where it goes. It, you know, you could be facing something similar, which would be a nightmarish scenario here. But the point I'm making is you can expand the game. And I think the more I've learned about international sports, and you heard him bring up cricket and the cricket, you know, World Cup being played here, not too far from where I am on Long Island, and how I've seen so many Americans get
excited about different football clubs, European football clubs. There's bars dedicated to these football clubs. Obviously, if you're an Apple TV subscriber, you could watch, all sorts of what we call soccer, or, you know, international European football and American clubs and, you know, Red Bulls and, you know, and all that stuff. I probably sound ignorant. I don't watch any of it. Can baseball do the same thing? Can baseball peck away in the European market like, and football or soccer had such a better stronghold because the first generation immigrants had that in their blood? You're not having the same immigration back towards Europe where those first generation Americans that grew up on baseball could bring it back. So it almost has to be brought to them. And I think these kind of games help. I think the NFL expanding on them has helped the NFL, although that's a different type of sport, as we've talked about. You know, the NBA did it way before everybody else. And I think baseball has to accept the fact, and the media really has to stop with this. You need to market Ohtani. You need to market stars. You could market individuals in sports where those individuals dominate the ball. Basketball, a Jalen Brunson has the ball in his hands all the time. You know, a Luka Doncic has the basketball in his hands all the time, a LeBron James, Michael Jordan. In the NFL, a quarterback has his hands in the ball all the time. Baseball, Mike Trout, will get four at-bats, but he may not hit a home run or do anything more than just play baseball and get a routine single. He's in center field. You may never see a diving play. You may not see the ball hit to them. It's all about the laundry. It's about getting people to get loyal to laundry and to the narrative of those teams and the culture of what those teams are. You heard Anthony talk about, you know, how they view Philadelphia as that blue-collar city, and maybe that they're rejecting the traditional greatness of the Yankees and gravitating more towards, you know, the Mets, who are almost like a Greek tragedy or some kind of Greek mythology story, you know, a Sisyphus type of team. And, you know, that to me is how this thing grows. It's not going to be because all of a sudden Shohei Ohtani grows it because he's this exciting guy to watch. It's because they start to root for teams. I know that this younger generation roots for players. I cannot understand it. I grew up, I did not root for Michael Jordan. I wanted to beat Michael Jordan as a Knicks fan. Okay? Nothing was exciting watching Michael Jordan beat the Knicks in the 90s. But I know that I was not the norm, maybe. And there were a lot of people who became, in New York, rather than Knicks fans, Bulls fans, because they identified with or wanted to be identified with the greatness of Jordan. Baseball can't do that. They just can't. It has to be about regionalizing in areas across the pond, whether it be Germany, France, the UK, the Netherlands. You know, culturally, I'm not in Europe. I don't know how easy it would be outside of the UK to promote the sport. I think obviously the UK is the closest because, let's face it, if you go back in history, and I made the joke to Anthony about, you know, imagine 250 years ago, our ancestors in Britain and in the United States even contemplating what went on this weekend in London between the colonies and the British Empire. The Brits are as close to who we are as an American citizens because they're pretty much our cousins. We were spawned off of them. So if there is a country in Europe that would potentially appreciate the game of baseball, it's probably them. And I made the comment during my remarks with Anthony about how a lot of my first-generation friends who were first-generation from Italy gravitated towards the NHL because, in my opinion anyway, it was the closest thing to, you know, European football that they grew up watching, that their parents were into. And I wonder if you're a cricket fan over there or the nuance and the strategy that comes with baseball that to a certain degree is part of European football. It's not just about running up and down and kicking towards the goal. There's setups, there's strategy, there's defense, there's offensive systems. There's so much to it that baseball has that. When Edwin Diaz, when he comes back, is pitching, it's not just about throwing that fastball down the middle. It's about how does he set that batter up. It's about that chess match that we play watching pitch by pitch. It's the drama that doesn't happen in an instant like the NFL or the NBA. It's the drama that builds up and explodes and then calms down. You know, there's a certain amount of nuance that you have to learn and grow up to appreciate in baseball. And you just can't market that. So you know what baseball needs to do is just expose people to it. And if they continue to do that with how they did it this weekend, I think they're going to have some success. I think expanding on it, whether it make it a full week or bringing more teams, you know, do it early in the year and maybe May, June, July before the All-Star break so that it doesn't impact the pennant race because it is a hell of a lot of travel. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is have this in August when these guys are dead tired and you're adding pretty much a monster road trip to the schedule, the dog days of August for teams that are trying to compete and win for a pennant. And then obviously their competition may not be exposed to the same thing. So anyway, those are my last and final comments about the London series. A really fun experience, an experience that enlightened me. I appreciate Anthony contributing. Had a hell of a good time going on his show. Hope I contributed and gave the good people of the UK something to think about from the American perspective. And I have a ton of respect and admiration about how they handled this series and how the field played. I know it was a little tricky with the fly balls and the bounces, but you know, look, nothing's perfect. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. And, you know, heard Chase Utley talk about the role he's playing. And hopefully baseball can continue to chip away and carve out, you know, Mets fans, Phillies fans, Yankees fans, whatever, because that's where the growth is going to be. You'll have growth of the next generation in the States, but mega growth, what the sport needs is kind of what the NBA did and got themselves out of just that regional situation. It became a global, worldwide sport. And you heard him say that, Anthony, that the NBA is extremely popular. I don't know if you're going to, it's going to take a long time for baseball to get there, but you got to start somewhere. And, you know, you can't tell me a sport that drew 110,000 fans over 2 days can't be successful in the UK, because you would not have those many people. Even, you know, I know it's a novelty, but that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people, even on a weekend. So anyway, I want to thank Anthony for joining me. Check out his Transatlantic Sports podcast and his book on X at AR Wooten. So check him out over there. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG. Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.